3, 2, 1.
You are now listening to the Shalana Fultz Talk Show, where I share stories of women who have overcome opposition and evolved into amazing entrepreneurs and powerful leaders. As a former event planner of 10 years, I am now infusing events with my exciting energy as an MC and host. Motherhood also compelled me to build a home-based business. I am the founder and owner of HBCU Legacy Fashion, a kids' boutique that builds awareness around HBCUs while giving back through scholarships. You can learn more at HBCULegacyFashion.com. Now that we're acquainted, let's get into the show. 3, 2, 1. I am so excited about this episode today. I'm interviewing one of my homegirls, Dominique Clark, on how to get into an industry that you don't have experience in. So if you're looking to make major moves, then you need to listen to this episode because Dominique is sharing all of her tips and her secrets. She is the founder and CEO of BenWorthy.com, host of Ben Worthy, the podcast, two-time award-winning journalist, relationship expert, author, and TV host. She's worked on camera, hosted celebrity red carpets, and interviews for outlets such as TV One, the BET Awards, and so much more. You can learn more in the show notes about Dominique. But for now, let's get into the show. Help me welcome Dominique Clark. Dominique, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited to have you here. And if you would, let me know, what did you want to be when you were 8 years old?
Oh my goodness. When I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a pediatrician. I told my mom I wanted to be a kid's doctor. She had me write this goal down and we put it on the refrigerator and she never let me lose sight of it until I was in college.
Wow. So when did all of that change? When did the pediatrician change?
Yeah, so I was really committed to this thing, okay? So I went to a high school that had a medical program, Southern Durham High School. I was pre-med in college. I have a degree in biology, but it was my freshman year of college when I realized that, you know, I knew I wanted to impact the quality of people's lives. And growing up, I felt like medicine was like the only way to do that, mm-hmm. you know, or the most popular way of doing that. But when I got into college and I got to explore different things and understand different passions and interests of mine beyond medicine, I realized that that wasn't going to be the end goal anymore, right? At the time, I didn't know what plan B was going to be. So I was still kind of exploring. And, you know, this path to purpose is often very convoluted. It's never straight and narrow. And so, you know, at that point in college, I realized God is calling me to do something different. I just wasn't sure what that different thing was.
Okay. And so I've known you for a few years. We went to church together in North Carolina. And so I moved to Ohio. And I remember then, I don't remember what you were doing before you became an entrepreneur, but I remember your journey, your path, and you started off as a coach or a matchmaker.
That's
and
right.
So you almost kind of coach single people in a way. So you started off as a matchmaker. I remember going to your office and we like even did an event together. And so tell me how you went from, okay, I'm going to be a pediatrician to whatever you did next to I'm a matchmaker.
Yeah. So when I decided I didn't want to be a pediatrician anymore, even pursue medicine, you know, I was left with this biology degree. So what do I do? Right.
Right.
And so I started working at Duke in research. I was in their urogynecology department and it was just not, it was great to be able to use my background, to use my degree, but I knew that this was not it. It didn't excite me. I wasn't looking forward to coming to work in the morning. And then I got pregnant. And when I got pregnant with my daughter, Zoe, who's the oldest, she's 8 years old, I knew that if I was going to birth a young woman into this world, I had to know who I was. Mm-hmm. And I needed to know the direction that God was calling me to move in. Because if I was going to empower her to do the same, I needed to be walking the talk. And so it was during that time of pregnancy and preparing to birth, you know, my first daughter, that this idea of love and relationships kind of came about. And so I was working in this research facility surrounded by all these amazing doctors, PhDs, fellows, you know, all the things. And they sucked at love, but they were super smart. Academically, they had, you know, excelled in all the ways, but they admired my relationship with my husband. Wes the best is what I call him. And Wes and I have been together since 16. And so they're like, hey, how are you doing this? How did you meet this guy? And you guys are, you know, being able to successfully sustain your relationship. You've got a baby on the way. Like, I want what you have. And so I started coaching them on the job. I started playing matchmaker on the job. I started creating online dating profiles for them for fun, just to like help them get themselves out there and boost their confidence. And just be more aware of the abundance, in my opinion, of love that is, you know, always around. And it was working. They were like, you know, successfully being matched. They started telling their friends about me. And so I started getting inquiries, and I'm like, I'm not a matchmaker. I'm not a coach. I don't even know what to charge these people. And at the time, the millionaire matchmaker was like a thing. Like, it was a big thing on TV. Everybody was watching. And so that was like literally my only, you know, knowledge of what someone in the love space would do, right? And how they would operate a business. So I went into research. I researched everything about matchmaking and relationship coaching. I got certified as a matchmaker and relationship coach. I interned under Paul Carrick Brunson, who at the time was the top Black matchmaker in the country. And so I got to learn firsthand from him how to, one, service the community I wanted to serve, and how to scale a relationship business, right? And then I got my MBA, and then I started my own business. I left my job at Duke, and I started this career in the relationship industry and the love space, and I did that full time for 8 years.
See, I remember when you were getting your MBA, because you got that in DC. Was that at American University?
That's right.
Okay, yeah. And weren't you pregnant?
Atlantic University is what it's called now.
It's not American University anymore?
No, well, originally it was BAU University, which is Turkish, and I can't remember but they've recently, in the last year or so, rebranded to Bay Atlantic University. It literally sits right beside the White House.
Yeah. Okay. So weren't you pregnant when with your second one?
Yeah.
So you were traveling back and forth from North Carolina to DC to get your MBA, like on the weekends, you would come home or vice versa. How were you doing all of that? Like, how were you managing this matchmaking business? You know, you're pregnant. You have, I don't know how old Zoe was at the time, but I know she was really small. And
she was two.
Yeah.
2.5 years old. She was 2.5 when I was getting ready to have Zara, my second.
Zara. Okay. So was everyone like, you're crazy? What are you doing? You need to be home. Like, how did you handle all of this?
I thought I was crazy for sure. It was a hot mess. It was a whole lot. But, you know, it speaks to how important having a tribe is, because that's what got me through. I was pregnant with Zara. And I would drive to DC every Saturday morning. I would leave Durham at 4:30 a.m. to get to class by 8:30. And I didn't do this alone. My mom was really excited about me, you know, going forth with my education and, you know, going further with it outside of just having my bachelor's. And so she decided she was going to drive me every Saturday.
That's
especially
amazing.
Because I was pregnant and she didn't want me to travel alone. At the time, my husband was working in retail. So the weekend was like prime time for him. So he couldn't go with me. So my mom would drive me every Saturday morning. We'd get up, leave at 4:30 a.m. and Zoe would be with us. And so I had all the Leapfrog stuff, all the movies for her to watch. Then when we would get there, I'd be in class from 8:30 to 5:30 on Saturday. My mom would then take Zoe to like a museum or some kids type stuff or activities to do while we were in DC. And I'm pregnant. So sometimes we're stopping on the side of the road because I'm getting nauseous.
Oh, you have to use the bathroom. Oh my gosh.
I have to use the bathroom or just all the things. And so it was really a lot. And then luckily, you know, I had family that lived in the DC area. So I always had a place to stay if we needed to stay overnight. But I did it because it was something that was really important to me. And I really, really wanted to do this. I knew I didn't want to go to medical school, but I at least wanted the next level of education. That was just a personal desire and goal for me. And so it was worth taking that trip. Over a year. It was an 18-month program. And the day that I had to give my final presentation, Zara was born. I was 2 weeks postpartum, and I was nursing her as I was giving this Zoom presentation because she needed to eat. And I'm like, well, listen, we're just going to have to figure this thing out. And so that's how that went.
I did not. You know what? Now that I'm a mom, like, I had no clue how, like, ballsy and how boss that was of you back then. To be, like, I didn't comprehend. I thought it was like, wow, she's going back and forth. That's really cool. But like, now that I've had kids, it's like, that's on a whole other level. Like, you took your child, like, you were pregnant. Like, that's just, I would have been like complaining the whole time. Like, I can't do this. I gotta pee every 5 minutes. I can't do it. But that, I mean,
I'm not saying it wasn't complaining, because there definitely was a complaint here. Well, and there.
I know, but you did it though. You did it. So, okay. So then you finished the MBA. I remember, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, if there's another piece, but I do remember She's Valuable and that book coming out. And I remember I got the book and I read some things. Did something happen before the book? Am I missing any pieces? So you finished your MBA. Were you still matchmaking at that time?
Yeah. So okay. 8 years, up until 2 years ago, I was full-time matchmaker and relationship coach.
Okay. So then She's Valuable comes out, and I remember reading the book. And I remember reading how you found out something that happened in your childhood that kind of, I guess, stained you in a way. And so as an adult, or like just growing up, it kind of messed with your like self-worth. Do you want to share about that? It's a sensitive topic, so.
Sure. No, I shared it in my book because once you have forgiven, once you've done the internal work and you recognize and you embrace your story and recognize that every piece of that is a part of building you into whoever God has created you to be, then you can talk about it. You can speak about it and not, you know, feel triggered or embarrassed or anything. So when I was 2, I was molested by a very close family member. From that, I actually ended up with an STD. Luckily, it was curable, but at 2 years old, can you imagine having to have surgery to get, you know, yeah. So that right there messed me up for a long time, mainly because, you know, the person that's supposed to love and care for you and protect you was the person that violated me in such a big way. And the impact of that didn't just die in that moment. It carried on with me for years and impacted not only how I engaged with men, my ability to trust men, but even with women and other relationships. It was really, really hard for me. I would show up in spaces very insecure and not confident in myself. People would see things in me and I'm like, well, I don't know how you see that. I don't see that. I don't think I'm that great, or I don't think I'm beautiful, or I don't think I'm worthy, because that experience told me that I wasn't enough, that I didn't matter and I wasn't valuable. And so that was a defining moment in my life. But I also think it was setting the foundation for the work that I'm doing today. Yeah. You know, I'm a worthiness enthusiast. I say that, but I am that way because I was the girl, right? I was the girl that didn't know I was worthy. I was the girl who struggled immensely with not feeling like I was enough and feeling insecure and having doubt in myself and who I was and who it was God called me to be. And so having personal experience in that gave me, you know, I don't know, the courage, the willpower to then talk about it and help other people. I'm like, if I experienced, you know, these feelings, I'm sure this is a shared endeavor. Many women have experienced feelings of not feeling good enough, but I am, it's crazy to say it now, but I am so grateful for that moment because it taught me a lot. And from that moment, from that experience, I learned to love myself in a way that I don't know that I would have without it, you know?
Yeah. So at 2, I imagine you obviously, you probably didn't remember much of it. Did someone have to tell you that this happened to you? And why did they decide to tell you when it could have been like, well, you know, she was two, she doesn't remember, let it just like leave her so she doesn't have to worry about that. Have you ever like wondered like, why did anyone tell me this? Or, you know,
Shalane, you going deep, girl. I didn't know we were going to go this deep.
This is what I do. That's why I asked. Is I'm here off for limits? It.
Nothing's off limit. I'm here for it. So my mother chose to share this moment with me. I grew up with a single mother. So at the age after this incident happened, I was actually born in New York, Long Island, New York. After this incident happened, my mom abruptly moved myself and my sister to Durham, North Carolina, which is where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But she decided to tell me when I was, I don't remember the age that she shared it with me, but we were having challenges with my father, him being present, paying child support, just being a dad. And, you know, he wasn't really paying child support and being the dad that my mom needed him to be as a single mom. And although I would see him every Christmas or every other Christmas and every summer, there was still a huge disconnect, right? And so there was this one day I was in the car with my mom and we had just finished cleaning a home. My mom owned a cleaning company. And so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I would get up at 4:30 in the morning to clean a commercial building. On Saturday mornings, I would go clean a residential home with her. And so we just finished cleaning a house and she had been distraught about a situation with my dad. Mm-hmm. And I began to defend him.
Ooh.
And that bothered my mom, right? Because she had done a good job at kind of shielding me from some of the things that my dad wasn't doing right mm-hmm. and wasn't showing up for. And so as I began to defend him, she had a moment of, no, let me tell you about the man that you're defending. Before you do that, let me stop you. Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment that she shared with me what happened. And I just remember, ooh, I don't know that I think I'm about to cry, Shalane. I remember feeling so low, being so confused as to who anybody was at this point, you know, and I questioned my relationship with everybody in my life. And I think I was just in shock and disbelief. And it made sense because I'd then gone to therapy a little bit after that. And there's a chunk of my life that I don't remember growing up. And it is because of that experience that time frame in my life is blocked, right? Because of that traumatic experience. And so I felt robbed in so many different ways, right? And so that's why that conversation came up. And that's why my mom decided to tell me, because she wanted me to get the full picture of who this person was in my life. And then give me the opportunity to decide how I was going to navigate the relationship with them moving forward. And so that was that. It was out of frustration that she shared it. It was out of anger. She also wanted me to be aware. I was very, very young when I got this news. So it was very hard for me to process and understand on my own completely and in the healthiest way. But that was that.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry that I took you there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. Let's go to a happier place. Let's talk about how you have been doing all the things. Like you said you were a biology major, you did matchmaking, and then somehow you ended up in this industry that you had no experience in. And there are so many people who would love to be in a new industry, but they don't know how to get there. And you became a journalist. Like you were in radio, TV, all of these great things. Tell us how you got there.
Yeah. So you mentioned my book, She's Valuable, But Does She Know It? I wrote that book and the publisher of that book said, Dominique, you have such a great message. Have you thought about doing radio? And I had never thought about radio. I had never thought about the media industry, entertainment, any of that. It was like the furthest thing from my mind. But I had previous experience by being interviewed as a matchmaker and relationship coach on my local TV show or TV station. I would contribute once a month. You know, I would write, contribute different relationship articles to different publications. So I had, you know, some experience with it, but I never thought that this would be a direction that I would go in terms of my career. And so I decided to pitch this show concept to the station, and she actually had a show at this station at the time as well. I pitched my show concept. The network owner loved it, brought me on. This show, the station was in Atlanta. Now, mind you, I'm living in Charlotte, so here's another travel moment.
All over the world.
All over. Luckily, this time I didn't bring the kids with me. But every Friday, I had my radio show, No Strings Attached, from 6 to 8 p.m. in Atlanta, Georgia. And it blew my mind. One, that I was able to do it, because when you talk about creating the content yourself, pitching publicists and management companies for their talent to appear on your show, running the show, doing all the communication, the branding for the show. I did all of it, graphics, logo, everything, from anything you could think about. The only thing that I did not do was run the boards. Luckily, I got to show up, put my headphones on, talk to my guests, and go. But I did everything. And so, but I loved it. I loved it. I loved curating these conversations with different celebrities and kind of humanizing them in the best way. I love talking to influencers or just dope women and men in their communities who were doing great things and kind of giving them a platform. But most importantly, I felt like it was this newly discovered passion and my personality colliding in the best way. Right? I felt like my personality had a home. Like, I am just so personable. I never meet a stranger. You know, just high energy all the time. And so the radio just seemed like the perfect place for me to release all of that stuff.
Yes.
And I did that for a year. I traveled back and forth for a year. But let me tell you, I would do it again, because the skill set that I developed, the people that I was able to meet and interview and have conversations with, and then most importantly, it awakened something inside of me that I didn't know was there. And so it was kind of like, ding, 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 girl, this is it. This is what you should be doing. Like, you need to figure this thing out. But I didn't know, there was no steps. There was no guide. I literally had to figure out whatever the next step was going to be. And so at the time, I was already the exclusive relationship writer for a major publication. And this particular publication was looking for correspondence. They were looking for additional media correspondence. And I said, well, I'm ending my radio show. I'm kind of doing the same thing, so I feel like maybe I should, you know, shoot my shot and see if this works. And they brought me on, and I started covering red carpets for them. I actually hosted one of their award shows one year, and that, you know, going to the next level, blew my mind even more. And the confirmation that I got from different people experiencing me and things like that, it was just like, girl, this is where you're supposed to be. Run with it, you know? And so from there, everything kind of just took off.
And I've been like proudly watching, like, oh my gosh, go Dominique. Like, why did you decide to pitch to a place in Atlanta, or a place that was like outside of where you lived?
Yeah, well, initially I thought that it was like just internet radio, that I could do it wherever I was.
Okay.
And although they offered that, they were like, you're going to get the best value, the best experience, more people tuned in if you come in studio, because they offered like a dual listenership type of thing. So you could, it was Breakfast Club style. So you could watch us or you could listen. And so I wanted that experience. I wanted to be in the studio. I wanted to have a place for my guests that were coming, because Atlanta is such a hot spot. I could grab talent easily, because most people are doing press runs in Atlanta, right? They have to stop through there. So, hey, why not stop by No Strings Attached, share what you got going on with my audience, and, you know, keep it moving. So I wanted just a legit place for guests to come and experience me in studio. And so I just thought it made for a better experience. I didn't have to do that, but I did.
But yeah, that's awesome that you did do that. And it just shows like how much tenacity you have and just the go-getter attitude. So I would definitely say that if you do want to move into a new industry, then you definitely got to have some of that go-getter in you. What else would you suggest?
Yeah, I think the first thing is really understanding, knowing who you are. Because for me, I know everybody can't do what I've done. Everybody is not willing to make the same sacrifices. And, you know, so I knew who I was. I knew what I was willing to do, what I wasn't willing to do. And so I think you got to kind of set the stage there, really know who you are, know your limits, you know what you're willing to do and those type of things. And then the next thing is really tap into your passion. Make sure this thing is something you're really passionate about, because the only reason why I'm able to go hard in the paint for it is because I believe so strongly that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what God has put me on the earth to do, at least in this season of my life, right? And so you got to really know what you're passionate about and be committed to that thing and be willing to go hard in the paint, you know, even when the wheels are falling off. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is really being confident in your ability. So when I first started, I was a little timid and people kept telling me like, girl, you got to be more confident. Talk your ish. Like, yes. It's not like you're not good at this. Like, do it and show up in the space and own the room that you're in. And I took that advice into account for the first time when I went to the 50th NAACP Image Awards, which was my first time covering a carpet of that magnitude by myself. So I flew to LA by myself, didn't have a videographer that I was familiar with. I just put some feelers out there and said, hey, people in LA, I need a videographer. you know, booked my own Airbnb, navigating LA by myself. And it was very intimidating for me. I actually got emotional, like on the plane going there, like, oh my God, am I ready for this? This is right. A lot. But then I get into the press room and I'm sitting beside, literally in the front row of this press room, I'm sitting beside Essence, Cosmopolitan, Ebony, Dominique Clark. And at that moment, I'm like, I'm in the room and I deserve to be here. There's a seat with my name on it. Girl, meet the moment, rise to the occasion, shine because you're here. And so be confident, because when the time comes, you're going to need to shine and show up, stand with your head a little taller amongst people that you feel like you don't even deserve to be beside, but yet you find yourself in that space. And so showing up confidently and trusting the gift that's within you, I would say, is the third thing.
Awesome. Yes. I heard Bishop Jake say the moment does not announce itself. So just being ready and prepared, because you don't know when it's coming and what you want, what you asked for. So
okay. Be careful what you ask for yeah. Sure.
Yeah. You know what? Before I have one more question, but before I end there, you know, a lot of moms listen to this. So I want to just briefly get your take as a mother, how you handle like the mommy guilt, or just everything being a mom. Like, did you feel the guilt when you would leave, or how was that?
I always feel the guilt. I still
wow, Nikkei dropped some nuggets on this episode. Hey, take a screenshot, post it to your stories, letting me know what you learned in this episode. Make sure you tag me at Shalina Foltz on Instagram. And if you enjoy this episode, please give it 5 stars and leave a review. Don't be selfish. Share it with a friend. You never know who needs to hear it. Thank you for tuning into the Shalina Foltz Talk Show. And never forget, you're doing your best, and your best is good enough.
And so he would come with me all the time, which was wonderful. So I had a piece of home with me. But FaceTiming my kids was really tough. And then, mommy, I miss you. When are you coming home? And so I don't know that for me, the mommy guilt will ever really go away, because you recognize that you're wearing multiple hats, you know. And I, you know, someone asked me the other day, you know, how do I balance it all? I don't, and I honestly don't even believe in balance. I believe in prioritizing, and so I have to prioritize what needs my presence, my energy, my focus the most at that time. And then what I have to do with home is having consistent conversation and not making it like this is what mommy has to go and do, but no, this is what we're doing and committing to as a family. Everybody plays a role and everybody's equally as excited and participating in this. So it's not mommy's going to do this. It's okay, we're going to support mommy as she is, you know, doing this. We get to watch her on the screen, but, you know, while she's gone, we're going to make sure the house is together. We're going to be cheering her on via FaceTime, you know, whatever. And so for me, it's been making sure that I'm prioritizing what needs me the most in that moment, having consistent conversation with my family, my kids specifically, about what mommy's doing and how it's going to impact their life. And then I'm starting to see the ripple effect because they see mommy doing things on television, interviewing folks on camera, whatever. Their little personalities are now shining bright and they're like, oh, well, I could do that too. And they do it well, you know? And so moments like that, when I see them kind of shining in their own way and their own element and, you know, being confident to speak and have conversation, looking people in their eye, wanting to do a YouTube channel and all this type of stuff, it makes me proud. It makes me feel good that, okay, what I'm doing is not in vain. It is not negatively impacting my kids, but actually it's empowering them in their own ways, in their own lives, to really rise to who God is calling them to be and kind of explore some things that they may be interested in. And so, I don't know, I think I'm talking in circles now, but I don't balance it all. I do what I can with what I have in the moment, and I am okay with that. And I'm having consistent conversation with the people I love the most around me and making sure that they're okay. They're part of the process and that they're understanding what's happening, so that it could eliminate some of the guilt on my end and then some of the maybe frustration that they may have when they don't have access to mommy all the time, you know?
Well, I love that you say you make it a family thing. And then also earlier you mentioned how you wanted to be able to figure out who you were, your passion, everything, because you were raising these girls. So there you go. Like, you're showing them how to be this incredible woman, you know, this, you know, entrepreneur, this everything. Like, you're teaching them that. So I guess, you know, for women and for mothers, that's something that can give us a little bit of peace. It's like, at the end of the day, I'm building this. For me, I always say, I'm building this for my kids. It's a legacy to show them what they can have and what they can do. So that's what brings me some peace.
For an interview, maybe they're setting up my ring light, you know, or whatever, but they're part of the process.
Yes, I love that. Now, finally, you have, I don't know if it's launched. I think it's 7 days it's launching, or 6 or 7 days.
1 week away today.
1 week away.
I'm so excited. I'm like, this is like this. Because I am overwhelmed. Okay.
Ben Worthy Media. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so Ben Worthy Media, one, I just posted about it today that I have literally been avoiding creating my own media platform for years because it is not easy, it's a big leap. I initially wasn't creating a media platform. It was just going to be an app that women could go and enjoy, get affirmations, connect with each other, you know, and that was going to be it. And in January of this year, God changed the whole thing. He's like, no, this is not supposed to be just an app. This is going to be a media platform, and this is what you're going to do with it, and this is who you're going to target with it. And it just started flowing. I had no intention to go into 2021 with starting a media platform, but, you know, our plans, our ways are not our ways, you know, our thoughts are not as thoughts, you know what I mean? And so I get this idea, and I always say it's a God idea, because good idea, there's good ideas and there are God ideas. God ideas, you can't do it by yourself. There's no way. It's bigger than you. It's not about you. You'll need all the spiritual downloads. You know, you need to have all these conversations with God to lead you, because it is often when you have, in my opinion, a God idea, there's no clear blueprint for you to follow. You literally have to keep your ear to him, your mind to him, because he is the one that's going to be ordering your steps every step of the way. For me, this was not my goal. This was not my plan. I did not want to do this, but here I am. And so Ben Worthy is all the things, the two things that I love the most coming together. Empowering women to see themselves as God sees them. These worthy, beautiful, confident, fearless, strong, intelligent women that matter, who have purpose and God has a plan for them, and bridging the thing, you know, my love for media, having great conversations, sharing stories, specifically stories of Black women that go untold, And so being worthy is an attitude. It's how I want women to show up in the world. Being worthy is the affirmation you didn't know you needed, right? And that you need to start including in your list of affirmations, because it's not that you're worthy, it's that you've been worthy, right? It's nothing you have to try to aim for. It's not out of touch, outside of yourself. It intuitively dwells within. You are worthy. And so this platform is to just confirm that for the women who visit the site and engage with Been Worthy at every touch point, whether it's on social media, newsletter, the website, the podcast, our YouTube channel, in-person events, whatever. But it is that. That is what Been Worthy is. And so I'm excited. It is the intersection of feminism, self-worth, authenticity, and entertainment for the women of color. And I'll be covering global stories in entertainment, news, beauty, and wellness. And we are launching on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. And I am beyond excited and proud of this moment.
That's beautiful. Your journey is amazing and I love it. I am rooting for you. This is so exciting. I can't wait to see everything that Been Worthy Media does. Tell everyone how they can get in touch with you.
Yes. So you can follow me on my personal page at @IAM_DClark. Of course, more importantly, I want you to do all the Been Worthy stuff. So I want you to visit www.beenworthy.com. You can get notified on all the launch stuff and excitement leading up to the launch and after. I want you to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Been Worthy Media. And it's also Been Worthy Media on YouTube. We'll have some YouTube stuff coming up soon. And then Been Worthy the Podcast. Now, Been Worthy the Podcast, that's going to be launching at the end of March. And it is a safe space for women of color to share their worthy aha moment. Now, this is that moment when you realize not only are you worthy of all the things that love and life have to offer, but you've been worthy and you started acting accordingly. And so we've cried, we've laughed, we have been upset, you know, we have cheered each other on. It's been such a great experience and the conversations are just so dope. So I can't wait to release these episodes. So you'll have that to look forward to. And if you just want to learn a little bit about me, just in general, what I have going on, you can visit DominiqueClark.com.
Thank you again, Dominique.
Three, two, one.
Here we go!
To this episode, because Dominique is sharing all of her tips and her secrets. She is the founder and CEO of BenWorthy.com, host of Ben Worthy, the podcast, two-time award-winning journalist, relationship expert, author, and TV host. She's worked on camera, hosted celebrity red carpets, and interviews for outlets such as TV One, the BET Awards, and so much more. You can learn more in the show notes about Dominique. But for now, let's get into the show. Help me welcome Dominique Clark. Dominique, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited to have you here. And if you would, let me know, what did you want to be when you were 8 years old?
Oh my goodness. When I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a pediatrician. I told my mom I wanted to be a kid's doctor. She had me write this goal down and we put it on the refrigerator and she never let me lose sight of it until I was in college.
Wow. So when did all of that change? When did the pediatrician change?
Yeah, so I was really committed to this thing, okay? So I went to a high school that had a medical program, Southern Durham High School.
If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, take a screenshot, tag Shalana Fultz on Instagram, and let me know what your favorite part was. And never forget, you're doing your best, and your best is good enough. I'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Doing that. But when I got into college and I got to explore different things and understand different passions and interests of mine beyond medicine, I realized that that wasn't going to be the end goal anymore, right?
Together in North Carolina, so I moved to Ohio, and I remember then, I don't remember what you were doing before you became an entrepreneur, but I remember your journey, your path, and you started off as a coach or a matchmaker.
That's
and
right.
So you almost kind of coached single people in a way. So you started off as a matchmaker. I remember going to your office, and we like even did an event together, and so tell me how you went from, okay, I'm going to be a pediatrician, to whatever you did next, to I'm a matchmaker.
Yeah, so when I decided that I didn't want to be a pediatrician anymore, even pursue medical, you know, I was left with this biology degree, so what do I do, right?
Right.
And so I started working at Duke in research. I was in the U.S. gynecology department, and it was just not, it was great to be able to use my background, to use my degree, but I knew that this was not it. It didn't excite me. I wasn't looking forward to coming to work in the morning. And then I got pregnant. And when I got pregnant with my daughter Zoe, who's the oldest, she's 8 years old, I knew that if I was going to birth a young woman into this world, I had to know who I was. Mm-hmm. And I needed to know the direction that God was calling me and leading. Because if I was going to empower her to do the same, I needed to be walking the talk. And so it was during that time of pregnancy and preparing to birth, you know, my first daughter, that this idea of love and relationships kind of came about. And so I was working in this research facility surrounded by all these amazing doctors, PhDs, fellows, you know, all the things. And they accepted love, but they were super smart. Academically, they had, you know, excelled in all the ways. But they admired my relationship with my husband. That's the best, is what I call him. And Wes and I have been together since 16. And so they're like, hey, how are you doing this? How did you meet this guy? And you guys are, you know, being able to successfully sustain your relationship. You've got a baby on the way. Like, I want what you have. And so I started coaching them on the job. I started playing matchmaker on the job. I started creating online dating profiles for them for fun, just to, like, help them get themselves out there and boost their confidence and just be more aware of the abundance, in my opinion, of love that is, you know, always around. And it was working. They were, like, you know, successfully being matched. They started telling their friends about me. And so I started getting inquiries, and I'm like, I'm not a matchmaker, I'm not a coach, I don't even know what to charge these people. And at the time, the millionaire matchmaker was like a thing. Like, it was a big thing on TV, everybody was watching, and so that was like literally my only
knowledge of what someone in the love space would do, right, and how they would operate a business. So I went into research. I researched everything about matchmaking and relationship coaching. I got certified as a matchmaker and relationship coach. I interned under Paul Carrick Brunson, who at the time was the top Black matchmaker in the country. And so I got to learn firsthand from him how to, one, service the community I wanted to serve and how to scale a relationship business, right? And then I got my MBA. And then I started my own business. I left my job at Duke and I started this career in the relationship industry and the love space, and I did that full time for 8 years.
See, I remember when you were getting your MBA, because you got that in D.C. Was that at American University?
That's right.
Okay, yeah. And weren't you pregnant?
Atlantic University is what it's called now.
It's not American University anymore?
No, well, originally it was BAU. University, which is Turkish, and I can't remember but they recently, in the last year or so, rebranded to Bay Atlantic University. It literally sits right beside the White House.
Yeah, okay. So, weren't you pregnant when with your second one?
Yes.
So, you were traveling back and forth from North Carolina to D.C. to get your MBA, right? Like, on the weekends, you would come home or vice versa. How were you doing all of that? Like, how were you managing this matchmaking business? You know, you're pregnant. You have, I don't know how old Zoe was at the time, but I know she was really small. And
she was 2.
Yeah.
2.5 years. She was 2.5 when I was getting ready to have Zara, my second.
Sorry. Okay, so was everyone like, you're crazy? What are you doing? You need to be home. Like, how did you handle all of this?
I thought I was crazy for sure. It was a hot mess. It was a whole lot. But, you know, it speaks to how amazed or how important having a tribe is, because that's what got me through. I was pregnant with Zara, and I would drive to D.C. every Saturday morning. I would leave Durham at 4:30 a.m. to get to class by 8:30, and I didn't do this alone. My mom was really excited about me, you know, going forth with my education and, you know, going further with it outside of just having my bachelor's. And so she decided she was going to drive me every Saturday, especially because I was pregnant and she didn't want me to travel alone. At the time, my husband was, Wes was, working in retail. So the weekend was like prime time for him. So he couldn't go with me. So my mom would drive me every Saturday morning. We'd get up, leave at 4:30 a.m. and Zoe would be with us. And so I had all the Leapfrog stuff, all the movies for her to watch. Then when we would get there, I'd be in class from 8:30 to 5:30 on Saturday. My mom would then take Zoe to like a museum or some kids type stuff or activities to do while we were in D.C. And I'm pregnant. So sometimes we're stopping on the side of the road because I'm getting nauseous.
You have to use the bathroom. Oh, my gosh.
I have to use the bathroom or just all the things. And so it was really a lot. And then luckily, you know, I had family that lived in the D.C. area. So I always had a place to stay if we needed to stay overnight. But I did it because it was something that was really important to me. And I really, really wanted to do this. I knew I didn't want to go to medical school, but I at least wanted the next level of education. That was just a personal desire and goal for me. And so it was worth taking that trip over a year. It was an 18-month program. And the day that I had to give my final presentation, Zara was born. I was 2 weeks postpartum, and I was nursing her as I was giving this Zoom presentation because she needed to eat. And I'm like, well, listen, we're just gonna have to figure this thing out. And so that's how that went.
I did not, you know what, now that I'm a mom, like, I had no clue how like ballsy and how boss that was of you back then to be, like, I didn't comprehend. I thought it was like, wow, she's going back and forth, that's really cool. But like, now that I've had kids, it's like, that's on a whole other level. Like, you took your child, like, you were pregnant. Like, that's just, I would have been, like, complaining the whole time. Like, I can't do it. I got to pee every 5 minutes. I can't do it. But that, I mean.
Now, I'm not saying you were complaining, because there definitely was a complaint here
and there. I know, but you did it, though. You did it. So, okay. So then you finished the MBA. I remember, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, if there's another piece, but I do remember She's Valuable and that book coming out. And I remember I got the book and I read some things. Did something happen before the book? Am I missing any pieces? So you can't, so you finish your MBA. Were you still matchmaking at that time?
Yeah. So okay. 8 years, up until 2 years ago, I was full-time matchmaker and relationship coach.
Okay. So then She's Valuable comes out and I remember reading the book and I remember reading how you found out something that happened in your childhood that kind of, I guess, stained you in a way. And so as an adult or like just growing up, it kind of messed with your like self-worth. Do you want to share about that? It's a sensitive topic, though.
Sure. No, I shared it in my book because, one, once you have forgiven, once you've done the internal work and you recognize and you embrace your story and recognize that every piece of that is a part of building you into whoever God has created you to be, then you can talk about it. You can speak about it and not, you know, triggered or embarrassed or anything. When I was two, I was molested by a very close family member. From that, I actually ended up with an STD. Luckily, it was curable. But at 2 years old, can you imagine having to have surgery to get, you know, yeah. So that right there messed me up for a long time. Mainly because, you know, the person that's supposed to love and care for you and protect you was the person that violated me in such a big way. And the impact of that didn't just die in that moment. It carried on with me for years and impacted not only how I engaged with men, my ability to trust men, but even with women and other relationships. It was really, really hard for me. I would show up in spaces very insecure and not confident in myself. People would see things in me and I'm like, I don't know how you see that. I don't see that. I don't think I'm that great, or I don't think I'm beautiful, or I don't think I'm worthy, because that experience told me that I wasn't enough, that I didn't matter and I wasn't valuable. And so that was a defining moment in my life. But I also think it was setting the foundation for the work that I'm doing today. Yeah. You know, I don't like, I'm a worthiness enthusiast. I say that. But I am that way because I was the girl, right? I was the girl that didn't know I was worthy. I was the girl who struggled immensely with not feeling like I was enough and feeling insecure and having doubt in myself and who I was and who it was God called me to be. And so having personal experience in that gave me, you know, I don't know, the courage, the willpower to then talk about it and help other people. I'm like, if I experienced, you know, these feelings, I'm sure this is a shared endeavor. Many women have experienced feelings of not feeling good enough. But I am, it's crazy to say it now, but I am so grateful for that moment because it taught me a lot. And from that moment, from that experience, I learned to love myself in a way that I don't know that I would have without it, you know?
Yeah. So at two, I imagine you obviously, you probably didn't remember much of it. Did someone have to tell you that this happened to you? And why did they decide to tell you when it could have been like, well, you know, she was two, she doesn't remember, let it just like leave her so she doesn't have to worry about that. Have you ever like wondered like, why did anyone tell me this? Or, you know,
boy, Shalane, you going deep, girl. I don't know if we're going to go this deep.
This is what I do. That's why I asked. Is I'm here off for limit?
It. Nothing's off limit. I'm here for it. So my mother chose to share this moment with me. I grew up with a single mother. So at the age after this incident happened, I was actually born in New York, Long Island, New York. After this incident happened, my mom abruptly moved myself and my sister to Durham, North Carolina, which is where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But she decided to tell me when I was, I don't remember the age that she shared it with me, but we were having challenges with my father, him being present, paying child support, just being a dad. And I
Dominique.
I saw my dad every summer and every other Christmas.
It broke up. you said, I'm sorry, I'm going to, I'll edit this part. Yeah, because you're frozen. I'll edit this part out. But the last part was you talking about your dad not showing up and being there. And then it just, like, froze.
Oh, no. Okay, do you want me to just pick up there? Or do you want me to
repeat the question? You could pick up there. There were some other spots that froze, too. So I might just use, like, clips for videos, but maybe not the whole thing. Because it's, like, frozen. And okay. I don't know if you want that. But yes, yeah, so
I'm still
sorry.
Frozen.
No, right now, you're not. Right now, you're not.
Okay.
So if you want to pick up, I'm sorry because I know that you were into it, but I wanted you to know that I couldn't hear anything. Okay.
My dad was not, when I was younger, my dad was not that present. You know, he wasn't really paying child support and being the dad that my mom needed him to be as a single mom. And although I would see him every Christmas or every other Christmas and every summer, there was still a huge disconnect, right? And so there was this one day I was in the car with my mom and we had just finished cleaning a home. My mom owned a cleaning company. And so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I would get up at 4:30 in the morning to clean a commercial building. On Saturday mornings, I would go clean a residential home with her. And so we just finished cleaning a house and she had been distraught about a situation with my dad, mm-hmm. and I began to defend him.
Ooh.
And that bothered my mom, right? Because she had done a good job of kind of shielding me from some of the things that my dad wasn't doing right mm-hmm. and wasn't showing up for. And so as I began to defend him, she had a moment of, no, let me tell you about the man that you're defending before you do that. Let me stop you. Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment that she shared with me what happened. And I just remember, I don't know that I think I'm about to cry, Shalana. I remember feeling so low, being so confused as to who anybody was at this point, you know, and I questioned my relationship with everybody in my life. And I think I was just in shock and disbelief. And it made sense because I'd then gone to therapy a little bit after that. And there's a chunk of my life that I don't remember growing up. And it is because of that experience that time frame in my life is blocked, right? Because of that traumatic experience. And so I felt robbed in so many different ways, right? And so that's why that conversation came up, and that's why my mom decided to tell me, because she wanted me to get the full picture of who this person was in my life, and then give me the opportunity to decide how I was going to navigate the relationship with them moving forward. And so that was that. It was out of frustration that she shared it. It was out of anger. She also wanted me to be aware. I was very, very young when I got this news, so it was very hard for me to process and understand on my own completely and in the healthiest way. But that was that.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry that I took you there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. Let's go to a happier place. Let's talk about how you have been doing all the things. Like you know, you said you were a biology major, you did matchmaking, and then somehow you ended up in this industry that you had no experience in. And there are so many people who would love to be in a new industry, but they don't know how to get there. And you became a journalist. Like you were in radio, TV, all of these great things. Tell us how you got there.
Yeah. So you mentioned my book, She's Valuable, But Does She Know It? I wrote that book, and the publisher of that book said, Dominique, you have such a great message. Have you thought about doing radio? And I had never thought about radio. I had never thought about the media industry, entertainment, any of that. It was like the furthest thing from my mind. But I had had previous experience by being interviewed as a matchmaker and relationship coach on my local TV show or TV station. I would contribute once a month. You know, I would write, contribute different relationship articles to different publications. So I had, you know, some experience with it, but I never thought that this would be a direction that I would go in terms of my career. And so I decided to pitch this show concept to the station. And she actually had a show at this station at the time as well. I pitched my show concept. The network owner loved it, brought me on. This show, the station was in Atlanta. Now, mind you, I'm living in Charlotte. So here's another travel moment.
All over the world.
All over. Luckily, this time I didn't bring the kids with me. But every Friday, I had my radio show, No Strings Attached, from 6 to 8 p.m. in Atlanta, Georgia. And it blew my mind. One, that I was able to do it, because when you talk about creating the content yourself, pitching publicists and management companies for their talent to appear on your show, running the show, doing all the communication, the branding for the show. I did all of it, graphics, logo, everything, from anything you could think about. The only thing that I did not do was run the boards. Luckily, I got to show up, put my headphones on, talk to my guests, and go. But I did everything. And so, but I loved it. I loved it. I loved curating these conversations with different celebrities and kind of humanizing them in the best way. I love talking to influencers or just dope women and men in their communities who were doing great things and kind of giving them a platform. But most importantly, I felt like it was this newly discovered passion and my personality colliding in the best way. Right? I felt like my personality had a home. Like, I am just so personable. I never meet a stranger. You know, just high energy all the time. And so the radio just seemed like the perfect place for me to release all of that stuff.
Yes.
And I did that for a year. I traveled back and forth for a year. But let me tell you, I would do it again, because the skill set that I developed, the people that I was able to meet and interview and have conversations with, and then most importantly, it awakened something inside of me that I didn't know was there. And so it was kind of like, ding, 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 girl, this is it. This is what you should be doing. Like, you need to figure this thing out. But I didn't know, there was no steps. There was no guide. I literally had to figure out whatever the next step was going to be. And so at the time, I was already the exclusive relationship writer for a major publication. And this particular publication was looking for correspondence. They were looking for additional media correspondence. And I said, well, I'm ending my radio show. I'm kind of doing the same thing, so I feel like maybe I should, you know, shoot my shot and see if this works. And they brought me on, and I started covering red carpets for them. I actually hosted one of their award shows one year, and that, you know, going to the next level, blew my mind even more. And the confirmation that I got from different people experiencing me and things like that, it was just like, girl, this is where you're supposed to be. Run with it, you know? And so from there, everything kind of just took off.
And I've been like proudly watching, like, oh my gosh, go Dominique. Like, what? So why did you decide to pitch to a place in Atlanta, or a place that was like outside of where you lived?
Yeah, well, initially I thought that it was like just internet radio, that I could do it wherever I was.
Okay.
And although they offered that, they were like, you're going to get the best value, the best experience, more people tuned in if you come in studio, because they offered like a dual listenership type of thing. So you could, it was Breakfast Club style. So you could watch us or you could listen. And so I wanted that experience. I wanted to be in the studio. I wanted to have a place for my guests that were coming, because Atlanta is such a hot spot. I could grab talent easily because most people are doing press runs in Atlanta, right? They have to stop through there. So, hey, why not stop by No Strings Attached, share what you got going on with my audience, and, you know, keep it moving. So I wanted just a legit place for guests to come and experience me in studio. And so I just thought it made for a better experience. I didn't have to do that, but I did.
But yeah, that's awesome that you did do that. And it just shows like how much tenacity you have and just the go-getter attitude. So I would definitely say that if you do want to move into a new industry, then you definitely got to have some of that go-getter in you. What else would you suggest?
Yeah, I think the first thing is really understanding, knowing who you are, because for me, I know everybody can't do what I've done. Everybody is not willing to make the same sacrifices. And, you know, so I knew who I was. I knew what I was willing to do, what I wasn't willing to do. And so I think you got to kind of set the stage there, really know who you are, know your limits, you know what you're willing to do and those type of thing. And then the next thing is really tap into your passion. Make sure this thing is something you're really passionate about, because the only reason why I'm able to go hard in the paint for it is because I believe so strongly that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what God has put me on the earth to do, at least in this season of my life, right? And so you got to really know what you're passionate about and be committed to that thing and be willing to go hard in the paint, you know, even when the wheels are falling off. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is really being confident in your ability. So when I first started, I was a little timid and people kept telling me like, girl, you got to be more confident. Talk your ish. Like, yes. It's not like you're not good at this. Like, do it and show up in the space and own the room that you're in. And I took that advice into account for the first time when I went to the 50th NAACP Image Awards, which was my first time covering a carpet of that magnitude by myself. So I flew to LA by myself, didn't have a videographer that I was familiar with. I just put some feelers out there and said, hey, people in LA, I need a videographer. booked my own Airbnb, navigating LA by myself. And it was very intimidating for me. I actually got emotional, like on the plane going there, like, oh my God, am I ready for this? This is right. A lot. But then I get into the press room and I'm sitting beside, literally in the front row of this press room, I'm sitting beside Essence, Cosmopolitan, Ebony, Dominique Clark. And at that moment, I'm like, I'm in the room.
Wow, Nikkei dropped some nuggets on this episode. Hey, girl, take a screenshot, post it to your stories, letting me know what you learned in this episode. Make sure you tag me at Shalina Foltz on Instagram. And if you enjoy this episode, please give it 5 stars and leave a review. Don't be selfish. Share it with a friend. You never know who needs to hear it. Thank you for tuning into the Shalina Foltz Talk Show. And never forget, you're doing your best, and your best is good enough.
Awesome. Yes. I heard Bishop Jake say the moment does not announce itself. So just being ready and prepared, because you don't know what is coming and what you want, what you asked for. So,
okay. Be careful what you ask for yeah. Sure.
Yeah. You know what? Before I have one more question, but before I end there, you know, a lot of moms listen to this. So I want to just briefly get your take as a mother, how you handle like the mommy guilt, or just everything being a mom. Like, did you feel the guilt when you would leave, or how was that?
I always feel the guilt. I still feel the guilt. Because when you're covering events like that, it's not a one day thing. Yeah. There's several events in a week time frame that are happening that you need to provide coverage for, that people were paying me to go out there to provide coverage for. And so I couldn't just say mommy's going to be gone for a day or two. No, mommy's gone for 5 or 6 days. Yeah. And that's a long time. And so that was difficult for me. And it is still difficult for me. Yeah. I don't like leaving my babies. I don't like leaving my man.
Yeah.
And at the time, Wes was my unofficial camera guy, my husband. And so he would come with me all the time, which was wonderful. So I had a piece of home with me, but FaceTiming my kids was really tough. And then, mommy, I miss you. When are you coming home? And so I don't know that for me, the mommy guilt will ever really go away. Because you recognize that you're wearing multiple hats. You know, and I, you know, someone asked me the other day, you know, how do I balance it all? I don't. And I honestly don't even believe in balance. I believe in prioritizing. And so I have to prioritize what needs my presence, my energy, my focus the most at that time. And then what I have to do with home is having consistent conversation and not making it like this is what mommy has to go and do. But no, this is what we're doing and committing to as a family. Everybody plays a role. And everybody's equally as excited and participating in this. So it's not mommy's going to do this. It's okay, we're going to support mommy as she is, you know, doing this. We get to watch her on the screen. But, you know, while she's gone, we're going to make sure the house is together. We're going to be cheering her on via FaceTime, you know, whatever. And so for me, it's been making sure that I'm prioritizing what needs me the most in that moment, having consistent conversation with my family, my kids specifically, about what mommy's doing and how it's going to impact their life. And then I'm starting to see the ripple effects, but because they see mommy doing things on television, interviewing folks on camera, whatever, their little personalities are now shining bright and they're like, oh, well, I could do that too. And they do it well, you know? And so moments like that, when I see them kind of shining in their own way and their own element and, you know, being confident to speak and have conversation, looking people in their eye, wanting to do a YouTube channel and all this type of stuff, it makes me proud. It makes me feel good that, okay, what I'm doing is not in vain. It is not negatively impacting my kids, but actually it's empowering them in their own ways, in their own lives, to really rise to who God is calling them to be and kind of explore some things that they may be interested in. And so, I don't know, I think I'm talking in circles now, but I don't balance it all. I do what I can with what I have in the moment, and I am okay with that. And I'm having consistent conversation with the people that I love the most around me and making sure that they're okay, they're part of the process, and that they're understanding what's happening, so that it could eliminate some of the guilt on my end and then some of the maybe frustration that they may have when they don't have access to mommy all the time, you know?
Well, I love that you say you make it a family thing. And then also earlier you mentioned how you wanted to be able to figure out who you were and your passion and everything because you were raising these girls. So there you go. Like, you're showing them how to be this incredible woman, you know, this, you know, entrepreneur, this everything. Like, you're teaching them that. So I guess, you know, for women and for mothers, that's something that can give us a little bit of peace. It's like, at the end of the day, I'm building this. For me, I always say, I'm building this for my kids. It's a legacy to show them what they can have and what they can do. So that's what brings me some peace.
Finally, so as I'm here for an interview, maybe they're setting up my ring light, you know, or whatever, but they're part of the process.
Yes, I love that. Now, finally, you have, well, I don't know if it's launched. I think it's 7 days it's launching, or 6 or 7 days.
1 week away today.
1 week away.
I'm so excited. I'm like,
this is
like this. Because I am overwhelmed. Okay.
So, okay. Ben Worthy Media. Tell me all about it.
Yeah. So, Ben Worthy Media, one, I just posted about it today that I have literally been avoiding creating my own media platform for years because it is not. It is not easy, rather. It's a big feat. I initially wasn't creating a media platform. It was just going to be an app that women could go and enjoy, could affirmations, connect with each other, you know, and that was going to be it. And in January of this year, God changed the whole thing. He's like, no, this is not supposed to be just an app. This is going to be a media platform, and this is what you're going to do with it, and this is who you're going to target with it. And it just started flowing. I had no intention to go into 2021 with starting a media platform, but, you know, our plans, our ways are not our ways. You know, our thoughts are not as thoughts. You know what I mean? And so I get this idea, and I always say it's a God idea, because good idea, there's good ideas and there are God ideas. God ideas, you can't do it by yourself. There's no way. It's bigger than you. It's not about you. You'll need all the spiritual downloads. You know, you need to have all these conversations with God to lead you, because it is often when you have, in my opinion, a God idea, there's no clear blueprint for you to follow. You literally have to keep your ear to him, your mind to him, because he is the one that's going to be ordering your steps every step of the way. For me, this was not my goal. This was not my plan. I did not want to do this, but here I am. And so Ben Worthy is all the things, the two things that I love the most coming together. Empowering women to see themselves as God sees them. These worthy, beautiful, confident, fearless, strong, intelligent women that matter, who have purpose and God has a plan for them, and bridging the thing, you know, my love for media, having great conversations, sharing stories, specifically stories of Black women that go untold. Mm-hmm. And so being worthy is an attitude. It's how I want women to show up in the world. Being worthy is the affirmation you didn't know you needed, right? And that you need to start including in your list of affirmations, because it's not that you're worthy, it's that you've been worthy, right? It's nothing you have to try to aim for. It's not out of touch, outside of yourself. It intuitively dwells within. You are worthy. And so this platform is to just confirm that for the women who visit the site and engage with Been Worthy at every touch point, whether it's on social media, newsletter, the website, the podcast, our YouTube channel, in-person events, whatever. But it is that. That is what Been Worthy is. And so I'm excited. It is the intersection of feminism, self-worth, authenticity, and entertainment for the women of color. And I'll be covering global stories in entertainment, news, beauty, and wellness. And we are launching on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. And I am beyond excited and proud of this moment.
That's beautiful. Your journey is amazing. And I love it. I am rooting for you. This is so exciting. I can't wait to see everything that Been Worthy Media does. Tell everyone how they can get in touch with you.
Yes, so you can follow me on my personal page at @IAM_DClark. Of course, more importantly, I want you to do all the Been Worthy stuff. So I want you to visit www.beenworthy.com. You can get notified on all the launch stuff and excitement leading up to the launch and after. I want you to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Been Worthy Media. And it's also Been Worthy Media on YouTube. We'll have some YouTube stuff coming up soon. And then Been Worthy the Podcast. Now, Been Worthy the Podcast, that's going to be launching at the end of March. And it is a safe space for women of color to share their worthy aha moment. Now, this is that moment when you realize not only are you worthy of all the things that love and life have to offer, but you've been worthy and you started acting accordingly. And so we've cried, we've laughed, we have been upset, you know, we have cheered each other on. It's been such a great experience and the conversations are just so dope. So I can't wait to release these episodes. So you'll have that to look forward to. And if you just want to learn a little bit about me, just in general, what I have going on, you can visit DominiqueClark.com.
Thank you again, Dominique. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, take a screenshot, tag Shalana Fultz on Instagram, and let me know what your favorite part was. And never forget, you're doing your best, and your best is good enough. I'll see you next week, same time, same place.